It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. This month marks the official release of a new comic book, one that stands out from any other comic book you might have read. It's called Chutzpow, Superheroes of the Holocaust, and tells the true stories of five Pittsburghers and their extraordinary deeds during a time of mass killings of Jews and others in Europe. The comic book is produced by the Holocaust Center of the Jewish Federation of Greater Pittsburgh, and in the interest of full disclosure, I currently serve as co-chair of the program committee of the Holocaust Center. I'm joined now in Studio A by the writer and one of the artists for Chutzpow, Superheroes of the Holocaust, writer Wayne Wise. Welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you, Paul. Thanks for having me.
And artist Marcel Walker, good to have you with us as well.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
If you'd like to join the conversation, 412-246-2002, the number to call. Where did the concept for this come from, Wayne?
My understanding is it originated with Drew Goldstein, who is at the Holocaust Center. Drew just wanted to use the metaphor of the superhero to talk about heroic things that people did. A lot of the earliest comics were produced by Jewish creators, Stan Lee, Jack Kirby, some of the names that are most well known. And that was taking place at the same time as the Holocaust, the late mid-1930s, early 40s. So he just saw a connection there historically. I was brought into the project originally as comics historian. I teach a class at Chatham on comics. I serve as a comic scholar for the Tunisium in town, who were also involved with this project. And it was a way of changing the conversation a little bit, a different way of educating about the Holocaust, rather than focusing on the horrors that took place, focus on these positive things, the idea of standing up against atrocity, and focusing on people can be heroic in these horrible, horrible circumstances.
Why, gentlemen, is there a need to sort of reinvent the means for teaching the Holocaust? I mean, some people are fascinated by history. This is obviously an important part of world history. And yet there are many who, when it comes to history, and regardless of how compelling the incident might be, there is a tendency for some people to kind of tune out for whatever reason. So why was it important to you to come up with a way to tell the story differently or in a way that engages younger audiences differently?
I'm a comics fan. I don't know if it's reinventing the way of teaching it. It's adding to the ways that have been taught. I find comics incredibly compelling. The imagery, the words and the images and the way they work together, rather than here's a textbook of dates and stories. This is a way of engaging people very visually. And I think it strikes an immediate emotional chord with them. I think that's true of just comics in general. I find it to be a very powerful storytelling tool and teaching tool. So that's a big piece of it. And it's also, like I said, it's to focus on the heroic acts, to engage people in a different way than they have before.
Yeah, I agree with Wayne. Like, it's been my experience that comics are incredibly engaging just to the average audience, people who haven't been exposed to comics, and people who are exposed to comics and who read them, they are very passionate about it. So it's kind of a way to sort of cross-engage audiences, people who are already into comics but may not be familiar with the subject matter, and people who are not into comics but would be inclined to want to learn more about this because of the engaging qualities of this medium.
There is a precedent for this in comics as well. Mouse, M-A-U-S, by Art Spiegelman, that came out in the mid-1980s. It won the Pulitzer Prize in 1993, I believe, and it's the story of his father was a Holocaust survivor, and he told that. It's a best-selling graphic novel. It's taught in universities across the country, around the world, and that's not the only graphic novel that has dealt with this topic. It's by far the most successful and famous one. But there is precedent for dealing with this type of topic in a comics form.
And I'm holding a copy of Chutzpow in my hands, and it is the images on the cover of this, which you designed, Marcel. There were five artists involved, but you contributed quite a bit to the panels inside, as well as designing the entire cover yourself. The five individuals who are featured in these stories are shown on the cover: Les Banos, Malka and Moshe Baran, Dora Eibler, and Fritz Ottenheimer. The images you drew, talk about how what you were going for here, Marcel. And we'll have, by the way, some photographs and these images will be on our website at WESA.FM. But talk about what you've done here, Marcel.
Specifically with the cover?
Yes.
Well, and I want to give a quick shout out to the other artists that participated in the project, Chris Moeller, Dave Wachter, and Mark Zingarelli, because they contributed equally powerful stories to this book. And knowing that I was going to be working on a book with them actually spurred me to kind of try and work at my highest level. It was a little daunting, but it was a good kind of daunting. And the cover itself was produced first. That's the first thing I did on the book because the Holocaust Center needed that for other purposes. They needed that to talk to people about this project, to try and get other people involved. The biggest challenge in drawing that, because we threw around several concepts for it before we settled on the concept, and I know you can't see it, our audience out here, but ultimately we settled on something that references an actual classic comic book. It references X-Men, Giant Size X-Men number 1 from 1973?
76, 75, 76.
Somewhere in there, yeah. And that's more for the composition, but as for the actual people in the book and the way they were rendered, there was some reverse engineering that had to take place as far as trying to figure out how they looked when they were young, because there wasn't a lot of reference for them at that time for obvious reasons. There were some, but there had to be some just kind of educated guesswork that took place, and we wanted the imagery to be iconic and represent. So when you see it, you get a sense of who and what they were at that time in that place, you know.
And so you have these five people bursting through mm-hmm. what looks like a flag, or it would be an emblem with a swastika mm-hmm. on it, and they're bursting through the middle of this, tearing it open, and out come these five people, the five people who are the heroes and the heroines of the story, and they are aligned in a way that makes it look like they are people who possess superpowers. But you didn't attribute any specific – you didn't add anything to the story that wasn't already truth of it.
No. Yeah, that's meant to be more figurative than literal.
Yeah, it's a symbolic thing. We wanted – say we're using the metaphor of the superhero, and we wanted the cover imagery in particular to reflect that. Just taking sort of some classic imagery of heroic imagery from comics. But the stories themselves are just straight up. They are the histories of these people. There are no capes. There's no one can fly. There are no superpowers. Their superpower is their heart, their courage, the things all of us possess. And that's part of the message we're trying to get across, is everybody has these superpowers, these things that allow these people to survive horrible circumstances and do so with a tremendous grace and dignity.
What's interesting about this too is you have leading the five people is one of the people whose story is told in Chutzpah, Superheroes of the Holocaust, Les Banos.
Mm-hmm.
Les Banos is a Pittsburgher that a lot of us growing up here remember hearing about his exploits as a sports photographer. Yesterday we were talking about the what would have been Roberto Clemente's 80th birthday. Mm-hmm. He took the most widely seen still photo of Clemente's 3,000th hit. He also had one of the famous shots of Franco Harris scoring the touchdown on the Immaculate Reception. And yet, unbeknownst to a lot of us, he has a very interesting story of his exploits during the Third Reich, as it were, and explain, Wayne, what that story is.
Les's story just simply blew me away. Les, there needs to be a movie. There needs to be a full graphic novel about Les. I mean, that's true in many ways of all of these people. Les's is the most cinematic and dramatic. In researching this, you know, Les came to Pittsburgh. He studied broadcasting in the 1950s. He worked for QED. He worked for WTAE, I believe, became a sports photographer, the things that you just mentioned. So he kind of established a legendary status here. What most people didn't know, and my understanding is he simply didn't talk about very much, was Les served as a double agent for the OSS in the 1940s.
The OSS, Office of Strategic Services,
exactly,
which was the forerunner of the CIA.
Exactly. They approached him. He was part of the resistance in – and my mind's blanking on
Somewhere in Nazi-held territory.
Yeah, Budapest. He was in Budapest.
So Hungary, which had been taken over by the Nazis.
He was part of the Hungarian resistance. He was approached by the OSS. He spoke fluent German. Less served as an SS officer in the Third Reich as a double agent. He had a uniform. He had a Nazi staff car. He had access to the seals, the official seals, the letterhead.
So he could stamp somebody's passport.
He stamped passports. He forged documents. He sent supply trains to the wrong locations. He rescued downed pilots and drove them out
of
the country.
Allied pilots.
Allied pilots. Drove them out of the country.
Hid Jews.
His family, his aunt and uncle, the people who raised him, had a factory. And there was a hidden space under it that he helped dig out. And over the course of the war, over 200 people had at one point or another been hidden in this very small space in this factory. It's just a remarkable story.
And it's a great process here. You tell that story, Wayne, in a very compelling way. And then, Marcel, you as the artist, take this image and describe what you drew of Les Banos. We just talked about this man's exploits, and you have him leading the charge on the cover of the comic book. And what did you decide you wanted to do with this here?
Well, because his story, as Wayne pointed out, is probably just the most overtly dramatic of all of them, it made sense to put him front and center on the cover. Now, it was a little tricky because we had discussed this near the beginning. It's kind of the Superman reveal. You know, he's wearing his Nazi uniform, the spy uniform, although we tried to downplay that just a little bit. But he's wearing that, and he pulls it up open, and you can see that he's just wearing normal clothes underneath, but you see the Star of David beneath. And
he's wearing it on his chest like the S that Superman wears.
Mm-hmm, pretty much. That's what's implied here.
What were you trying to say? What it was important to you to get across, Marcel?
Well, we're using the metaphor of the superhero, so in my mind it was important to make that overt. You know, superheroes are not subtle. They're pretty right there in your face. So.
That image of Superman revealing his symbol is probably the single most recognized superhero symbol in the world.
Mm-hmm. But what we found, because we were debating using this image, that portion of the image from the beginning.
Why the debate?
When I first did the original draft of that, it didn't quite work in context just as itself, because we didn't have any of the other characters in the same way on the cover. He was much more dominant figure on the cover, and it just felt like if this was the first thing that people saw, that was going to send, you know,
because he's wearing a Nazi uniform,
right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't work quite the same way unless you are more familiar with the story. But by adding the other characters with him, the other people, that gives you an idea of it. Just gives it context. And with context, I felt like it has more power, and it draws you in a little bit more.
And that by pulling the shirt open and revealing the Star of David, much in the way that Clark Kent reveals the Superman logo, that the identity of a courageous Jewish individual is front and center.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And we're aware that the Star of David, you know, it's a symbol that's very powerful and it's very meaningful to people. You know, it is. It's a religious symbol. It's a cultural symbol, which is different than Superman's S. We are aware of that. We wanted to be aware of empathetic to what this means to people and not just casually, oh, look, it's a superhero symbol.
Yeah, it's not a branding element in that regard.
Did you show this to other people, to members of the Jewish community or Holocaust survivors to get their take on it?
I did. I ran it past several friends while it was in development. And that was part of the feedback I used to determine that the original direction that was going in wasn't quite where we needed it to go. And then there were a couple of other iterations where we were just exploring the theme. That the thematic reveal of you know, having that what you are, the special thing, the real thing inside. But ultimately, we had a meeting, steering committee had a meeting, and that X-Men cover was proposed as a possible solution to the composition, and it just worked. It was just meant to be. Matter of fact, Wayne had found something that shows, I think, this cover was just meant to be.
Yeah, my father is a veteran. He was in World War II. He drove a Jeep across country. Dad turned 96 this summer. He's a force of nature. He was in the 7th Armored, drove a Jeep for his company captain. And I was talking to him about this project this summer, showing him a rough cut of the comic. And he pulled out – and I had seen this before, but it had been years and years and years. It's a small digest-sized book that he was given at the end of the war by the Army that detailed the trip of the U.S. Army, specifically the 7th Armored, across Europe. And when I flipped it over, on the back cover, there was a piece of art that was a tank, a U.S. tank, crashing through a Nazi flag. Exactly the way this cover is. And I saw that image months after this cover was designed. So the synchronicity of that just pleased me to no end. I had seen that image many, many, many years ago, but was not conscious of it whatsoever when we were working on this cover.
That's Wayne Wise, and he is joining us in Studio A. Along with artist Marcel Walker, they have teamed up to help create a comic book that highlights superheroes of the Holocaust. It's called Chutzpah, Superheroes of the Holocaust. And Wayne Wise is the writer, Marcel Walker, one of the artists, and the man who designed the cover for this comic book, which tells the stories of five Pittsburghers and their extraordinary deeds during a time of mass killings of Jews and others in Europe. We mentioned earlier that many Jews in the United States were behind the creation of comic books, mm-hmm. the early comic books, Superman being one of them. Is it a coincidence that all these early artists were Jewish?
I don't know if it's a coincidence. The publishing industry that grew in New York, there were a lot of Jewish people in the publishing industry. I don't know.
But the guys who created Superman, they were from Cleveland.
They're from Cleveland, yeah. Right. I mean, they moved to New York. They were working for National Periodic, was the company that became DC Comics. They'd been working for them as a writer and artist for 2 or 3 years before Superman appeared. I don't know. It's
Were Jerry Schuster and the other one.
Joe Siegel and Jerry Siegel, Joe Schuster. Superman very much just started the ball rolling with the whole superhero thing. The comics industry is really, while it existed for several years prior to that, the appearance of Superman in 1938 made it a financial success, and it exploded very quickly.
And superheroes were calling for American intervention in their stories long before U.S. entry into World War II.
Absolutely. And I think part of that was because of the number of Jewish creators behind the project. The cover of Captain America number one, which was 1941, Captain America, if you saw the movie, you saw this. Captain America's punching out Hitler on the first issue of the book. This was months before Pearl Harbor. It was months before America's official entry into the war. But the creators of Captain America, Joe Simon and Jack Kirby, who went on to co-create the Fantastic Four and the Avengers and Iron Man and Thor, et cetera, Jacob Kurtzberg, Jack Kirby, all of these people were hearing stories from Europe. They probably had a better idea of what was going on than non-Jews in this country. Most of them still had family there. They knew something horrific was going on, whether they knew details of it or not. And that background, just that being part of their life, if you're a writer or an artist, you can't help but have your life influence the art you create. So these themes were showing up very early.
Mm-hmm. And comics have always embodied a lot of social commentary.
Have comic books always been ahead of the curve on social issues?
Maybe in ways.
I'm going to say yes. I'm a proselyte for comics. I think comics are more wonderful than most people think they are. I'm going to say yes in that. I cover a lot of that sort of thing in my class at Chatham. There's just a lot of instances of racial things. Not that they've always been on top of it. One of the things I talk about in my class is in comics of the 1940s, the war comics, there's an element of propaganda there. The Japanese in particular are portrayed horribly on the covers and in stories of comics at the time. At the same time, so are any black characters who happen to appear in the comics, good guy or not. And that's indicative of the time. It's for good or ill, it reflects what's going on in the culture. You started seeing those changes in comics concurrent with civil rights movements and that sort of thing as well. So ahead of the curve, maybe. In a broader sense, the arts are ahead of the curve.
I don't even know if it's necessary for them to be ahead of the curve so much as just with their feet on the ground. Comics creators they've been plugged into the real world, you know, and that's been true since their inception, and that continues to be true.
And Marcel, you learned some interesting family ties through your doing this, I understand.
The Sam story.
Oh, yes. Okay, so I lived for a time when I was a child with my aunt Myrtle. And along with my siblings, and my Aunt Myrtle was the one in the family who just everybody was there at some point or another. So all the kids and everybody was there. Aunt Myrtle worked for a couple in Squirrel Hill for years, and I think she still works for them now. And she worked basically as a domestic, and she helped with their kids, their two sons. I found out after working on this project, like when I developed the cover, one of the reasons they needed that was so that they could, like I said, approach other groups and things and get their involvement. Well, one of these groups that was a group of young children, the group was named the Samuel Goldston Teen Philanthropy Project. Well, Sam Goldston was the son of the couple my aunt worked for. And as a matter of fact, I have a set of bed sheets right now that has his name on it, a set of Superman bed sheets. And when I saw that, I realized, oh my, that I felt like that just meant that I was supposed to be involved with this project.
And the project, again, is called Chutzpah, Superheroes of the Holocaust. It tells the stories of five Pittsburghers and their deeds of heroism during the Holocaust that took place in Europe during World War II. And the comic book, again, produced by the Holocaust Center of the Jewish Federation of Greater Pittsburgh. We've been talking with writer Wayne Wise and artist Marcel Walker, who teamed up to create this. Gentlemen, thank you so much for being with us on Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks for having us, Paul.
We appreciate
thank you.
It. Coming up, contributor Rebecca Harris on the business of franchises. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.